Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening and welcome to the Tattered Cover. And I just want to thank you all for coming tonight and thank you for your support of Tattered Cover and other independent bookstores around the country. Well, we're very excited, as always, to have A.J. Jacobs here with his latest book, Drop Dead Healthy: One Man's Humble Quest for Bodily Perfection. And just to give you some idea why you really all need this book, I don't know if you've had a chance, but if you look at this in the inside cover, you have a fine example of a very fit young man. And you can learn everything, how to have better sex, bacteria killers, what you want to avoid. It's just everything in here. And not to forget the other side of ourselves, we have a fine example of a very meditative Jacobs on the back cover and how you can calm your stress. So there you go. I think everything you need is in there so you too can achieve what A.J. Jacobs has. As many of you here tonight know, he has written The Year of Living Biblically, My Life as an Experiment, The Know-It-All, and Fractured Fairy Tales. All of these have become New York Times bestsellers. Will you please join me in welcoming A.J. Jacobs?
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming out. I met some of you. I was the greeter at the top of the stairs, but if I didn't meet you, nice to see you. It is lovely to be here. This is, as I'm sure they've heard a million times, this is a gorgeous bookstore. I mean, I love it, and it's really great to be back at the Tattered Cover. And it's also great to be here in the 9th healthiest state in the United States. So congratulations on that, guys. I come from New York, which is the 18th healthiest state, so I feel better already. You guys are very good with heart disease, low smoking rates. I will say, I did notice you are 35th in terms of visits to the dentist. So you got to work on that. But other than that, you're in pretty good shape. I thought tonight I would talk quickly about the first two books I wrote, which sort of led up to this book. Then I would talk about this book, Drop Dead Healthy, take some Q&A, and then I'll sign books and give away free stuff. It's not a lot of free stuff, but it is a $7 value, so it's something. For the last decade or so, I've been subjecting myself to pain and humiliation, hopefully for a good cause, and that cause is self-improvement. And I've done this in three parts. So first, I tried to improve my mind, then my spirit, and then finally my body. So to take the first one, the mind, after college, I just felt my IQ was slowly descending, maybe not so slowly, and I decided I had to do something to rectify this. My father, when I was a kid, had started to read the Encyclopedia Britannica, but he only made it up to the middle of the letter B, like Bolivia, somewhere around there, because he had a life, you know? But I thought, this is an interesting approach. What if I tried to finish what he began and remove that black mark from our family history? So I did. I bought an encyclopedia while it was still being printed. May it rest in peace. They just announced that they're not going to print it anymore. What a heartbreaking day for me. But I bought the entire stack. And if you stack them up on the floor, actually, it's about 4'10". So I called it in the book a Danny DeVito of knowledge. I mean, it is a serious amount of words. There are 44 million of them. And so I did. I read it from A to Z, or more precisely, from A aak, which is the first word, A-A-K, which is a type of ancient Korean music, all the way to zivyech, that's the last word, which is Z-Y-W-I-E-C, which is, well, I don't want to ruin the ending for those who haven't read. It's a town in Poland. But it was a fascinating year. It was painful. I mean, literally, physically painful. I had to change my glasses prescription. It was painful for those around me. My wife started to fine me $1 for every irrelevant fact I inserted into conversation. So there were those problems. But it was also a fascinating year because I got to spend a year with the most amazing people in history. And it was even uplifting because I read about the whole span of human events, and it seemed to me at the end that the good things that humans have done do outweigh the bad things, just by a little, not by a lot, but we have made real progress. Our lifespan has tripled, quadrupled. The amount of violence, even with the horrors of the 20th and 21st century, is way down from where it used to be. So it was an uplifting experience. Since then, I have forgotten probably 98% of what I learned. But the 2%, I still have 2% of the encyclopedia in there, and that's a lot better off than I was. And since this is a health-related book, I thought I still remember my favorite medical fact, which is that in 1898, the Bayer Aspirin Company invented a very powerful and effective cough suppressant. Does anyone know what it was called? Heroin. They invented heroin, patented it, came up with the name. Turned out it had some side effects in addition to the stopping of the coughing. So they had to readjust their marketing. But it was a wonderful experience. So I figured now that I've done the mind, what's next? Maybe I should take on the spirit. Maybe I should take on another of these big books, something even more influential than the encyclopedia, and that is the Bible. And I decided to do this because I grew up with no religion at all. As I've said before, I'm Jewish in the same way the Olive Garden is Italian. So not really. Nothing against Olive Garden, a wonderful restaurant. But I wanted to learn about my heritage because I had kids. I wanted to know what to teach them about religion. So I thought, well, one way to learn about the Bible would be to immerse myself in it and actually try to live it and learn about it from the inside out. So what I did is I got a board of spiritual advisors. So I got rabbis, ministers, priests, scholars. I bought all sorts of translations of the Bible, and I went through. I think there's a picture of our stack of Bibles. Oh, there's the encyclopedia. There's the Bibles. And I wrote down every rule, every piece of advice that I could find in the Bible. And as you might imagine, this was not a short list. This was hundreds of rules, over 700 of them. And I wanted to follow them all without picking and choosing because I wanted to see how does it affect the life if you actually live by the Bible? What will make your life better and what is maybe not as relevant in the 21st century? So I wanted to follow the famous rules like the Ten Commandments, and we have a picture in case you forgot, and love thy neighbor, and be fruitful and multiply. And there is a picture of that. I was fruitful and I did multiply. So that's, and thank you for the awe. That I'm going to tell my kids that they'll like that. But I also wanted to follow all of the lesser known rules. And there are hundreds, especially in the Hebrew scriptures, which I was concentrating on since I am Jewish. So the Leviticus says that you cannot shave the corners of your beard. And I didn't know where the corners were. So I just let the whole thing grow. And I had quite the topiary by the end hanging from my chin. And I think we have that's me in the beginning. And then there's more. And there I am at the end. So, yeah, it was not a great look. It was, I literally, this is not a joke, I spent a lot of time at airport security with that. I raise some eyebrows. But and then there's another rule in the Bible that says, it's in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, it says that you cannot wear clothes made of mixed fibers. And this one seems so strange to me. You know, why would God care if I wore a poly cotton blend? You know, it seemed like God was micromanaging here. But I thought, there's no way for me to know if this rule has any meaning unless I try it and live it. And so I did. I got rid of all of my poly cotton clothes. And the weird thing was, some of the stranger rules, the ones that seemed so absurd on the face of them, did turn out to have profound meaning for me by the end. Not that one in particular. That one I still never got my mind around. But many of the others. Because it really was a life-changing year. And it was, in a couple of different ways, it was so challenging. First of all, it was challenging because I had to do a moral makeover, a makeover of my ethics. Because, for instance, just for starters, the Bible says no lying, no gossiping, no coveting. And, you know, I'm a journalist and I live in New York City. So that's like my life. That's like 80% of my day. So I had to really change the way I acted. And this was actually one of the lessons I learned, is that how do you become a better person? If you pretend to be a better person, then eventually you start to become a better person. It was really a lesson in how much the exterior affects the interior, how much your actions can affect your thoughts. There's a phrase, it's easier to act your way into a new way of thinking than it is to think your way into a new way of acting. And I really found that to be true. It was also a challenge because I had to follow these rules that did not necessarily jibe with modern American customs. And just to take one example, there's the stoning of adulterers. And the Hebrew scriptures says over and over that you have to stone adulterers, so I figure I should at least try to stone one adulterer. And for those who haven't read the book, I'll just tell you very quickly how I was able to accomplish that. It was in Central Park, and I was actually at that point really trying to get into the character. So I had on my robe and my sandals, and I think we have a picture of what I looked like. One more. There I am. So I did not have the sheep. The sheep was a rental sheep just for the purposes of the cover. But at times I would actually go out just to see what it was like to look like that. And this guy came up to me and he said, "Why are you dressed like that?" And I explained, "Well, I'm trying to follow all the rules of the Bible, from the Ten Commandments to stoning adulterers." And he goes, "Well, I'm an adulterer. Are you going to stone me?" And I said, "Well, yeah, that would be great. Thank you. That is a nice offer." So I took out, I had a handful of stones in my pocket because I had been waiting for this moment, you know. It's hard to find a self-professed adulterer. And so I took him out and I showed it to him. I'm like, you know, they're small pebbles. It really wouldn't hurt that much. He was very aggressive. He grabbed the pebbles out of my hand and threw them at my face. And as you know, the Bible also says an eye for an eye. So I figured I can toss one back at him. So that is the way I accomplished my adultery stoning. After the year, I stopped stoning adulterers. I went back to wearing clothes of mixed fibers. And I did shave my beard, even though it had become a sort of a family member. A Labrador retriever, I thought of it as. But it changed my life in dozens of ways that continue to this day. I'll just, since it's not about this book, but I'll just give you a couple of very quick examples. One is just the idea of gratitude, which was very important in the Bible. The Bible says that you have to say prayers of thanksgiving. You have to be thankful for everything. So I took this as literally as I could. So I tried to be thankful for every little thing in my life. You know, I'd press the elevator button and I'd be thankful that the elevator came. I'd get in the elevator and I would be thankful it didn't plummet to the basement and maim me. I'm thankful that this microphone works. It's a little miracle. And you start to realize, it's a strange way to live because you're saying thanks all the time. But you start to realize there are hundreds of things that go right every day that we just totally take for granted. And we focus on the three or four that go wrong. So that has been a radical change in my perspective, and it has made my life better. So I really thank the Year of Living Biblically for that. It also changed the way I'm raising my kids. In the end, my wife and I did decide to join a synagogue. Now it's a Reform synagogue, and we don't really go. So, but I figure it's like a gym membership to just being a member of the gym. You lose weight; it's better for you. We do go sometimes. We go enough that I'm giving my kids just a little taste of Judaism. I want them to have a little foundation in our heritage so that they can later choose what they decide to do. If they decide to reject it or accept it, whatever they decide, as long as they're good people, as long as they're mensches, as the Bible says. I don't think the Bible says that. But as long as they're good people, I'll be happy. But I thought it would be nice to give them a little foundation. I don't want to be the one to break the chain completely. That was a wonderful year. And I decided, what's next? I've done the spirit. What about the body? And this I really needed. I figured this is a good way to end the trilogy, especially because I was in terrible shape. I was what they call skinny fat, which I don't know if you ever heard that term, but it's basically, it's the body of a snake that has swallowed a goat. So it was not good. And I got hospitalized with a case of pneumonia, and my wife got very worried, and she said, I don't want to be a widow in my 40s. You've got to shape up. And I said, okay, all right, I'll do. And I said, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to try to test everything in the world, all the medical advice, see what works, what doesn't, try to improve every part of my physical being, the exercise, diet, stress levels, sleep, sex life, posture, you name it. So that's what I did. I gathered again a board of advisors, this time medical advisors. So I had doctors and trainers and nutritionists, and I wrote down every piece of medical advice I could find. And this turned out just as long a list as the Bible. It was 70 pages long. It turned out to be an incredibly challenging project, because if you follow all the advice of health professionals, there's really no time in the day for anything else. You got to quit your job. So you got to exercise. There was meditation. That's very good for you, especially the brain and stress levels. Petting dogs is good for lowering the blood pressure. So I didn't have a dog, but I went out every day to the dog park and pet people's dogs when they would let me. Sometimes they got nervous. But going out into nature, there are actually studies that show that being in nature affects your cortisol levels, lowers your stress level. So I would go for a walk in the park. You had to put on suntan lotion, and not just a little. The dermatologists say you got to put on a shot glass of suntan lotion, even in the winter, and reapply it every 4 hours. So there was that. Then you had to make the food, because as you probably know, processed food is basically just sugar, fat, and salt rearranged in different arrangements. So you had to make your own food, and you also had to eat food. And if you're eating properly, this is not an easy feat, because we are a nation of under-chewers. We do not chew our food enough. And I ran across this movement on the internet, and it's called Chewdeism. And they're very passionate about chewing. They say, they're a little overboard. They say we should be chewing 50, 100 times per mouthful, which I tried, and it's like it takes you a day and a half to eat a sandwich. So it's not really feasible. But their main point is correct. We do need to chew more, because you get more nutrients out of the food, but I think more important, it slows down your eating. Anytime you can slow down your eating is good, because then you will eat less. So So I started to embrace Judaism. And now what else did I do? as part of the experiment, I wanted to try everything. So I tried all sorts of exercise and diets. For the exercise regimen, I think, let's see what the... Oh, no, this, I also got tested. This was, I got my... every part of my body tested so I could quantify what my progress or lack of progress was. So here's a brain test I took. I also took a sleep test. I think there's a picture of. Yes, that. Shockingly, I did not get a great night's sleep that night. I don't know. I have some theories, but I'm not sure why. And then I tried all sorts of fitness regimens. So this is called stroller sizing, where you use your child as a piece of a fitness equipment. Then there was, what else do we have? This was the caveman workout. This is part of the paleo movement where they believe we should be living and eating like cavemen and exercising like cavemen. So I went to like the head caveman in the world, and he took me on this adventure in Central Park. You take off your shoes and shirt, and you crawl around on the ground. You throw boulders. You climb trees, because this is the way, you know, cavemen did not have a membership to Equinox. This is the way they exercise. I tried yoga, upside down yoga. I tried pole dancing, which was an interesting experience. I will say I was impressed by the amount of like bicep, upper body strength you need to do pole dancing. I will never again make a disparaging comment. And I was also told very firmly by the pole dancers that pole dancing has nothing to do with strip clubs, aside from the fact that 95% of it occurs in strip clubs. That part they left out. But it's a sport. It's a sport and a way to work out. I also tried all sorts of products. I got the pedometer, and I got this skin-tight suit that's supposed to make your muscles recover more quickly. I actually have a picture of one of my other... I hope you've all eaten dinner. I have another piece of equipment. This is called Nature's Platform, because this was one of the big surprises of the year. I did not know I had been going to the bathroom wrong for 40 years. I won't go into too much detail, but I will say that our bodies were built to squat, not to sit. So this, you can actually buy this on the internet, and it helps you so you can squat over your toilet. My wife did not think that this went with the decor in our bathroom. So unfortunately, it no longer exists in our house, but it is available for purchase. Not mine in particular, I don't think. Now, at the end of the project, I did feel much better. I mean, I still do, and I hate to say that because I know that if I say I'm so healthy, then tomorrow I'm going to get rickets or river blindness or some horrible disease. So I try not to say it, but I really do feel the best that I've ever felt, and my energy is higher than it's ever been. And so for that, I thank this experiment. And I thought I'd end with just a few takeaways, about half a dozen of the takeaways of things that I still keep, because I couldn't keep everything, because otherwise I would have no time in my life for anything else. But there are many things I've kept, one of which is I really have been trying to avoid the sedentary life, because, and this is hard because I love the sedentary life. I could sit for like 16 hours a day, but the research on this really is alarming, how bad the sedentary life is for you. I read a quote that sitting is the new smoking. which is probably an overstatement, but it really does affect your heart and lowers your lifespan. So sitting for more than 1 hour at a time is something I try to avoid. And even just getting up for a couple of minutes every hour and walking around for a couple of minutes, that makes a big difference. I took it farther, so I got a treadmill, and then I set my computer on top of the treadmill, and I walked and wrote. So I wrote this book. It took me about 1,200 miles. It was great. I actually... People say, you know, how can you type and walk at the same time? Believe me, I am uncoordinated. I am not a coordinated person. So if I can do it, anyone can do it. And it really keeps your focus up and your energy levels up. So if there's anyone out there who has room in their office, it is something to look into. I think there's a picture of the... there it I am. This is just one of the setups. This is when I was walking backwards. Interestingly, this is a little side note I got from the encyclopedia. Treadmills in the 19th century were used as a way to reform prisoners in Victorian England. They would put them on treadmills for like 12 hours a day, and it was then deemed too cruel. It was in 1903, they were banned forever. So, but now people like, you know, pay $800 to buy one. So... It's ironic. Another lesson I learned is the importance of quantification. There's a whole movement about quantifying yourself and getting as many numbers as possible. Because the research says the more you pay attention to your numbers, the healthier you'll act. And I found this with something as simple as a pedometer. You know, I bought a lot of equipment, but really the $20 pedometer was one of the most powerful tools I found. Because... It turned it into a game. It turned walking into a game. They recommend, American Heart Association recommends 10,000 steps a day. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get to 10,000 every day. And then when you're at 8,000, you're like, all right, I can do this. I can get 2,000 more. Or when if my kids, they're always losing their stuffed animals, and I would always be annoyed because I would spend 20 minutes wandering around the apartment looking for them. But now with my pedometer, I'm like, I'm racking up the numbers. So it was exciting. I actually got a sort of a pedometer on steroids, which is called Fitbit. I don't know if any of you know this, but it's a little electronic motion sensor thing, and it'll tell you all your calorie input and output. They go into extensive detail on every activity you can imagine, how many calories that you expend. So not just running and tennis, but you can find out how many calories it takes to bake Indian bread, which is 210 calories, by the way. If you really want to work out, horse grooming, it is about 340 calories per... They also go into, I won't go into too much detail, but they have different types of sex in there, how many calories you expend for how vigorous the particular... So that was one, the quantification. In terms of food, one of the big take, there are two big takeaways. One was you got to change the quantity, and two, you got to change the quality. So, it's no big news break, but we as Americans tend to eat way too much food. And there are ways that I found effective for me to control the portions. One was the chewing. Another is the classic smaller plates. If you have a smaller plate, then you're less likely to fill it up with more food. I took it further. I stole my kids' forks and spoons. So I had these little forks and spoons, and I found that very effective. You know, I would eat more slowly. In terms of quality, it's a very confusing... I spent months reading everything I could because it is a very confusing area, because you have nutritionists who disagree. And it's like Congress in a sense. You've got really two sides that kind of hate each other. So you've got on the one side, you've got sort of the low-carb, the Atkins people. And they are best represented, I think, by a journalist named Gary Taubes, who wrote the book What Makes Us Fat. Is that what it's called? Why We Are Fat. Why We Get Fat. That's why it is. Why We Get Fat. And he's a brilliant journalist, and he presents all the evidence that everything is because of carbs. We've got to eat more protein and fats. That's the secret to a healthy life. And then on the other side, you have the plants advocates who say that, no, we've got to eat only plants. And this, perhaps the Bible of this side, is called the China Study. I don't know if you've ever heard of that book, but it's a very popular book, and it looks at a study of 800,000 Chinese people over 40 years, and it concludes that all of their problems are related to animal protein, and any kind of animal food will make you sick. So those are the two sides. I think that the preponderance of evidence is on the side of the plant-based. I think that the guy who wrote the China study goes way beyond the evidence, but I think that a mostly plant diet is probably healthier for you, at least based on the evidence now. But the good news is that there are lots of areas that everyone agrees on, and one of these is that refined carbs, processed carbs like white flour and white sugar, that really is the devil. That will get you fat. So I have really tried to cut down on all kinds of white foods, including potatoes, which send your blood sugar rocketing. Cauliflower is good. Cauliflower is sort of the exception that makes the rule. But that has been a big change in my diet. I'll just give you a couple of quick lightning tips. One is for sleep. The best sleep tip I learned that changed my life was that you should not count sheep. That is literally, they've done a study, and that does not make you go to sleep faster. That slows it down. But if you count backwards by three, so start at a random number like, 586, and then go backwards by three, like 583, 580, 577, that's just challenging enough and just boring enough that it will put you to sleep. And at least it works amazingly for me. I mean, if you're a math genius, then maybe you want to go with a higher number, like, 17 or something more challenging. But for me, three is the perfect amount. In terms of exercise, I don't do the caveman exercise. I do try to do two things. One is what I call contextual exercise. So trying to fit exercise into every nook and cranny of the day, because I think a lot of people go to the gym for an hour, if we're lucky, and then do nothing. And unfortunately, studies show that that is almost as bad as not going to the gym at all. You've got to try to keep moving as much as possible. So I started to climb the stairs instead of take the elevator. When I'm talking to my kids, who are, 8 years old, 5 years old, I squat down, so that I'm at eye level, and then I pop back up. So I'm doing like 50 squats a day without going to the gym. I started to run errands, which may be harder, I don't know, in Denver, but in New York, I literally run errands. That's what it says to do, so I'm going to run. I run to the drugstore, buy toothpaste, and I run back home. Also, this one I was surprised by, because I realized it's not just about exercise and diet. There are other parts of health, and one of them, which took me by surprise, was noise. I never realized what an impact noise has on our life. We were not built to live in such a noisy world. And when noise, evolutionarily, that would be a signal of danger. So that's what gets your fight or flight system going. So it causes stress, and there's a really an alarming number of studies that show that it has real effects on our cardiovascular system. There's one study that says people who work in noisy environments have 2 to 3 times the rate of fatal heart attacks as the rest of us. So I have 3 young sons, so I live in a very noisy environment. I'm quite at risk. So I do have some noise canceling earphones, and I also tried all the earplugs I could find, and I found what I think are the best. They're developed by for the military and law enforcement, and that is what I'll be giving away. That's the $7 value, in case you were wondering. And finally, one thought I wanted to leave you with is don't stress too much about health, because stress is really has real impact on your immune system, on your cardiovascular system. I mean, the evidence is pretty substantial on that, and which was hard for me because I was, especially with a deadline, I kept telling my, this book should have come out about a year and a half ago, but I kept telling my publisher, you know, stop talking about the deadline. You're just stressing me out. That is not healthy. But I think you can also be too stressed about health. And I interviewed a doctor right here in Colorado, actually. His name is Dr. Stephen Bratman. And he came up with a term called orthorexia, which he says is a new type of eating disorder. And what it is it's a unhealthy obsession with healthy food. It's if you are so obsessed with getting just the right food, just the right, you know, organically grown, local quinoa, you know, and that is all you will eat all the time, then that might be alienating you from your friend. You can't, if you can't go out to dinner with friends, that's not healthy, because being part of a, having a strong social network is really crucial to your longevity. So I say, you know, this year while I was doing this, I spent so much time on my health that I almost neglected my friends, and that turned out to be unhealthy. So go out to dinner with your friends. Don't stress too much. And if you do drink, drinking is okay. One drink per night, possibly two for men, is tied to longevity. So yeah, go out to dinner, have a drink, enjoy yourself. That is my final message. And now I'd be delighted to take any questions. So thank you. I'll just explain that picture. That was one of the other lessons I learned, is one of the things to motivate you is, you know, one of the keys to health is really how do you motivate yourself? And one of the ways is to think about your future self, because there's this Nobel Prize winning economist who came up with the idea of egonomics. We have two selves, and they're both at war. There's the current self that just wants to sit on the couch and eat Pop-Tarts. And then there's the future self, which wants that current self to do something healthy. So studies show that the more present your future self is, the healthier you'll act. So I took this literally, and I digitally aged myself on there's an app on the internet, so that I looked like, I don't know, 70, 80. It's a disturbing photo, so I won't leave it up there, because hopefully I won't look like that. Yeah, thanks, Scott. You can. but I actually found that to be quite motivating. So anytime you can think of your future self and try to treat that future self with respect, just like you treat your friends and family, because you want that future self to be around for your kids and for your family and friends. So that is the explanation of that weird picture. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to, or we can, yes. Right.
Yeah, that like you spend a lot of this time searching for this really rare edition of the encyclopedia. Have you ever
right. The question, just in case anyone didn't hear, the question was, did I ever find a copy of the 11th edition, which is widely regarded as the best edition of an encyclopedia ever printed? It was from 1913, I believe. And, you know, I never found an actual edition of it. I know they're out there, but the entire text is online. You can get the entire text online. And it is a fascinating book. I didn't read the whole thing, but I read parts of it. First of all, the writing is beautiful. It's like reading, you know, reading the current encyclopedia is like reading an instruction manual for like assembling a clock radio or something. But because they don't use florid language, but the 11th, they use this beautiful prose, and it's a very optimistic book because it came out right before World War I, and they believed that all of the world's problems had been solved and they were like on their way. The dark side is that it's kind of misogynist and offensive and racist and probably homophobic. So you got that. So there's the good and the bad. But I never did find an actual original. But thanks for asking. Any other? Yes, sir.
During this process with your last book, you lost weight then, I assume.
Right. Yeah, I lost about 20 pounds and three belt sizes. So, yeah.
Were you able to get your wife on the program, too? I mean, usually it's the woman that provides
Well, she was, I mean, she certainly liked it better than when I lived the year of living biblically. That was not fun for her. For those who haven't read the book, there's lots in the Bible about how you cannot touch women during certain times of the month. And sorry, I know there are babies in here. but if you take Leviticus really literally, you cannot sit on a seat where a woman in her time of month has sat. And my wife found this offensive, so she sat in every seat in our apartment. So that one, she had more issues with the Bible one. Initially, she was excited because she wanted me to get in shape. I think, you know, I took it a little further than she would have liked. And I did recruit her to go on some of these adventures. I took her to one of my favorite exercise classes in New York. It's called Intensati, and it's led by this woman who's revered like a cult leader. And she does these aerobics. And while you're doing the aerobics, she'll shout something out, and you have to repeat after. It's like a Tony Robbins thing. It's affirmation. It's like, you know, she'll be like, "I want it. I want it. I really, really want it." And then everyone in the goes, "I want it. I want it. I really." The best the catchphrase I thought was, "Every day, in every way, I co-create my reality," which is not the most catchy, but but I kind of agree with the thesis. We do co-create our reality. So I thought that was nice. But she hated it. My wife hated it. She's like, "This is Hare Krishna. Get me out of here, you know. I like to exercise. I don't like to scream out affirmations." Yes?
So was it more excruciating for you to read the entire encyclopedia or 20-some-odd versions of the Bible?
The question in case is, was it harder to read the entire encyclopedia or all 20 versions of the Bible? That is a good question. I mean, I'll tell you, the encyclopedia, there were parts that were just excruciating. You know, like, nothing against Portuguese literature, which I think is fine, but I did not need 28 pages on it, you know, 28 small type pages. I could have done with like 25. I would have been happy there. So there were definitely challenges. The Bible, one of the things that was fascinating to me with the Bible is that there are all these parts that I never heard about, you know, these very, very strange parts, especially in the Hebrew scriptures, you know, things about Noah that are not fit for polite conversation. So it was, to me, this was fascinating to read. And there were excruciating parts of the Bible as well. The whole, as everyone knows, the begats are hard to get through. So it was, each one was a mix. Sometimes you would have these fascinating snippets and then get into these excruciating parts. But luckily they would alternate. It wasn't like one part was all fascinating and then the other all boring. So it was nice. Yeah, it's like channel surfing. Yes?
Why did you or your publisher change the name of the Guinea
Pig Diaries? Oh, that was actually my decision and probably a mistake. But the problem was that people kept asking me, you know, so this is about how you had a guinea pig and like what you fed it. And it's like, no, it's like human guinea pig. So I think the title was flawed to begin with. But they actually optioned, weirdly enough, they optioned that book, NBC optioned that book to turn it into a TV show. And they called the TV show My Life as an Experiment. And Hollywood is a very strange place, I find, because they'll option these things, especially TV. They'll actually go out, hire actors. They made an entire set about... The TV show is about my life, like this guy named AJ who works at a men's magazine and does weird things. So, and they had an actor, Donald Sutherland, played my father-in-law. They spent literally millions of dollars on this pilot, and then they screen it for people to see if they like it, and usually they air about a third of them, and mine was not in that third. Mine was in the two-thirds that no one will ever see. So they have, like, now I have the most expensive home movie in the history of the world. It is very bizarre. Like, I've got these 22 minutes about my life that no one will ever see. So that was slightly off topic, but that was called My Life as an Experiment as well. Yes, Harry. Uncle Harry.
Thank you. How do you work your day job into all this?
Well, my day job, I'm very fortunate. I work at Esquire magazine, and my title is editor-at-large, which means I don't actually have to go into the office. It also means I don't get health benefits. That's another thing, editor. If you ever see editor at large, that's another tip-off. But I love my job, and I'm very lucky because I only spend probably 30% of my time on Esquire stuff, and that leaves the rest for books or other projects. So I'm very fortunate. Yes?
I just read that article Real Simply you did about
Yes. Thank you.
Anything more with exploring creativity in different ways?
I have, the question, in case you didn't hear, is I wrote an article in Real Simple, actually. It was kind of related to this book. That's why I wrote it. It was about how to be as creative as possible, because there are studies that say being creative is healthy. It stimulates the mind. So I did try, and it was interesting. You know, I tried all sorts of techniques, improv and brainstorming. There's a great book on creativity. I think he was just here, Jonah Lehrer. I don't know if any of you saw him, but he wrote a book on creativity that just came out. One of the tips, he says, that the studies show that the color blue really primes you for creative thinking. The color red, not so much. The color red is good for focusing. Like if you're taking an SAT, go into a red room if you can. I don't know how you can control it. But blue is good if you're trying to come up with creative ideas. So I have put blue things all around my room to see. So we'll see. If my next book is more creative, now you'll know why. Yes?
Which of the three books did you find most fulfilling, you know, working on your body, or your mind, or your spirit?
I would say, it was certainly, it was interesting on the body one, just to see the change in the body, the physical change. It was very concrete, to watch my stomach slowly shrink. In terms of how it changed my perspective on the world, I would probably say the Year of Living Biblically had the biggest impact. But each of them has changed my life. I still keep things from each of them. And I wouldn't trade any of them.
Should we do one more question and then you can find some books?
Sure. Yeah.
In the know-it-all, you mentioned a sort of lifelong rivalry with your father, always sort of trying to outdo.
Right. Well, the question was about my lifelong rivalry with my dad, sort of the Oedipal thing. I actually think it is a one-way rivalry. Like he just wants to be proud of me, and I feel inadequate, so I try to do. You know, so I don't know if it can officially be called a rivalry. But he is incredibly supportive. It is incredibly touching. I think I mentioned this in one of my books. Like, he goes on Amazon, and if there's ever a bad review of one of my books, he clicks not helpful. I like that. He's got my back. But he is good, you know. And I will never beat, one of his proudest accomplishments is that he's a lawyer and he writes books about the law, and he wrote a law article with the most number of footnotes in any law article ever, 4,812. And the world Guinness Book of World Records did not put him in, but he was in Harper's Index, where they do, like, here's a ridiculous statistic. And so he was very proud of that. And I will never beat him. So he's got me there. Did you have one more question back there?
Yeah, I guess you have a couple young sons, and so I don't have to apologize too much for these guys. I was wondering, after, you know, doing this for a couple of years, is there anything that you're really going to pass on to your kids? Anything you're doing different with your kids?
I think there is. And, I mean, one thing I like is that I hope that I've instilled some sense of adventure in them, and that they want to try things. And they're coming up with ideas for my next book. So they're like, you know, you should do... Their main idea is that I should eat only candy for a year, because that appeals to them. And they would be willing to go along with me on that, which is very nice. But also in a sense of curiosity, intellectual curiosity, I think. So hopefully I've been able to instill in them that, you know, who knows, we'll see what happens. But for now, fingers crossed, they seem to be doing good. So, well, thank you, and come on over. And as long as supplies last, I think I have enough for everybody. I can give you these awesome earplugs. So thank you very much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.